So as a matter of fact, we act and think as if these values were objective rather than merely subjective. So where does that come from? Where is that sourced in? If we deny objective values, we should be aware of the price we must pay. For denying objective values is something far more drastic than merely denying conventional or parochial or standards of behavior. It's to deny rationality itself.
Right, exactly. And so where's he going with this? Well, he says this, what is true, right, after all? And he says, it is many things, obviously, but among them, it is certainly an ethical value. So truth is an ethical value. The truth is what we ought to believe and what we ought to speak with one another. And so these oughts are oughts of ethical value.
Right. Right? Right. So even if we did something like peer review, this is the point that I usually make is, okay, you could have all the peer review literature in the world, but if no one's able to reproduce it with truth statements, like, oh, I reproduced this experiment and I found the same thing. Well, if you didn't do that, that doesn't add to the truth of the statement. That just makes you a liar. And once found out, it doesn't advance the argument whatsoever. It just bolsters this idea that, well, peer review is the highest form of knowledge, and the idea behind that is more, you know, there's an objective standard out there, and it's beholden upon all of us to interact with it in the same way, and then we are should communicate that truthful outcome to other people. And so that's where the peer review aspect comes from it. And so to tell the truth, or to say, I did this and I believe that you're wrong in you know, the way that you did this experiment and I got this conclusion, there's where the ethical part of it comes in. Even talking to one another, we base it on ethical standards. I come up to you and I say, you know, I disagree with what you did at work, and so now I'm going to punch you. Well, that's an unethical standard, because that doesn't talk to the facts of the case. It's only I'm able to hit you, and that has nothing to do with whether it was right or wrong. So the ethical value of even talking to one another is formulated even here.
Yeah, right. So we have to have some type of objective standard. In fact, he says the assertion that ethical values are merely subjective is self-contradictory, like all statements of subjectivism or skepticism. He says, for the subjectivist is telling us that we have an objective moral obligation to agree with subjectivism. See the problem there? Right. The subjectivist is telling us that we have an objective moral obligation to agree with subjectivism, while also telling us that no one has an objective moral obligation to do anything. Right. Well, you can't have it both ways, right? Either we have an objective obligation, therefore subjectivism is wrong, or we don't have an objective obligation, and therefore I don't care what your subjectivism says. I have one too, right?
Yeah. So my subjectivism is that all of us have to have one agreed upon objective value system. And so we go from there.
That's right. Yeah. Which is self-defeating, by the way.
Which is self-defeating. Okay, fine. All right. We didn't solve world peace at the end. All right. Well, okay. But before we consider the origin of moral values, let us note one more point. Ethical values are hierarchical, and they're structured that way. We should seek to make our children feel good is one ethical value, right? It's something that I think we all can agree on. We want our children to feel good, to be happy, to have what's best. But for most of us, it is a secondary value too. We should seek to teach our children self-discipline. One of those ways is, well, yeah, my children would love to have their iPads and play Roblox 24/7, but at some point they're going to have to learn math in order to figure out how much Roblox accounts for real money. And actually, probably the value of Roblox is way better than even what the dollar is at the taping of this episode. But at any single moment, there is one principle that takes precedence over all the others. One that prevails over all the others is governing our behavior. And we can see that by just walking through, okay, well, when come upon If you're a doctor, do no harm. Well, I found a person who's laying out in the street, and I can save them by cutting them open and removing this thing. I don't have their permission. Well, I should always have their permission, except this one thing could save their life for them to sue me. So at what point do we get, you know, up the rung of the ladder to say, here's our single most important hierarchical peak of ethical behavior? Well, that highest value is not only objective, but also absolute, for it takes precedence over all others and serves as a criterion for the truth of others.
All right. So notice what he's done here. He says, okay, let's consider moral values. He says they're hierarchical, right? So some take precedent over others. They're higher than others. They're more important than others.
Right.
They should be, exercised over others. But now, where do we stop? Well, he says there is a stopping point, right? There is a highest value that we kind of take that is over all the rest of the values, right? And so the next question then is, well, where does the authority of the absolute moral principle, the highest one, where does that authority come from?
Mm-hmm. Right? And yeah, so and I think we can look at this, especially as Americans, is where do we find the most ideas stem from for things like rebelling against the Stamp Act or you know the Boston Tea Party? Well, it wasn't just rooted in the fact of taxation, which in and of itself is immoral and illegal, but also it was written about in terms of freedom and liberty, and that's what caused more people to write points and counterpoints if depending on if you were for the rebellion or for staying as a loyalist. So you have the idea of, well, no taxation without representation, but the king is ultimately the one in authority and we don't go against him, therefore don't rebel. But then you have people who are writing about, Lockean type ideas of liberty and freedom. And then from there, say, and thus the king can't just do away with what should ultimately reside in the power of the governors. And therefore, this is immoral because of that. And so you have that type of hierarchy, even in kind of what us as Americans kind of view. And it's the ones we always go back to and read more and more, even though, yes, we should read about how 7 cents for a stamp increase is immoral, even if the king does it.
Right. So notice he's getting at the source of morality, and he says there's this hierarchy, right? Some are higher than others, but there's always one that's absolutely authoritative over all the rest of them. And so he says, what's the source of that? And he kind of cautions us that he's not asking whether the conviction itself, right, that this one is higher than the rest of them. He's not asking for the source of that. It's the source of that conviction as if it were a causal argument. The question, he says, concerns the authority of that principle. Why should I give it the enormous respect that indeed we do give it, that is the highest, principle that we use to judge all the rest of the things that we do? And right. He says, well, ultimately, there's only two kinds of answers that are possible. The source of absolute morality and moral authority is either personal or impersonal. Mm-hmm. That's what he says. So that's basically, ultimately, those are the two answers that we can come up with. Either the sources of absolute morality and moral authority is personal or it's impersonal.